Welcome to the Marvel Cinematic University podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Canton III, and this is a special episode as we are nearing the five-year anniversary of Avengers Endgame. And obviously, it's the biggest movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the second highest-grossing movie of all time. Was it Avatar? Avatar The Way of Water just beat it last year.
A movie with no cultural impact is what the people tell me.
Those are the lovely stylings of the super producer, Jake Christie. Jake, how are you?
I apologize for butting in before my intro. I just had to dunk again on the people who said that stupid thing.
Yes, of course. And we also have a special guest with us, friend of the show, Rod, a.k.a. the black guy who tips. Rod, how you doing, bro? Good to have you
back. Hey, what's going on, man? I'm a little embarrassed. This is egg on my face. I thought we were going to review the 2006 Endgame directed by Andy Ching, starring Cuba Gooding Jr. and James Woods. So it's going to be a weird review, guys.
Let me see. I might need to watch this just because.
I
mean, because I have no standards.
A Secret Service agent investigates the conspiracy behind the murder of the president is the tagline.
Oh, it's got a poster where you can tell that James Woods did not pose for it, that they just, like, photoshopped him on. Wow.
But yeah, I did watch the right movie, I think. So. Okay, good.
That's great. That is great to hear. And yes, Avengers Endgame. I've been thinking about this movie a lot over the past couple of weeks, especially with the way that everything has transitioned in the Marvel Cinematic Universe over the past 5 years and how things have changed, evolved in some ways. And let's just start with this simple question. How are we feeling 5 years later about this movie? I will start with our guest, Rod. What you got?
Oh, man, I just finished watching it right before we got on again. I hate to sound ridiculous, and I know it's going to sound over the top, but I think it's the greatest cinematic undertaking of all time to make this movie that brought all this shit together. It's honestly a love letter to movies, but it just, for people, I think for some folks, they don't think of it that way. They think of it as like, oh, it's the comic books and they all brought it. It's like, no, you have to go back to the beginning. You have to go back to, like, no one had done this before. These were their leftover characters that companies didn't want. You know, the studios didn't see movie futures for these guys. And they built something out of scraps over there at Marvel and turned it into a powerhouse that from the second you hear On Your Left, Cap, I get goosebumps and chills to this day for like the next 30 minutes of when I'm watching it. So, I just think, you know, being a kid that grew up looking at these colors on pages, you know, and these comic book bubbles, this is like a dream that I never thought would come true. And so I still feel that gratefulness when I watch this movie and just like, thank God Kevin Feige was there to steer the ship and get us something that good.
That's a beautiful thing. And Jake, how about you, sir?
I think for one, it's still a really fun movie to watch. I think that there's a lot of people, I think, even in like our Discord and in our orbit, who, you know, will say things like, you know, it doesn't really work as a movie, yada, yada, yada. And like, that is the thing I intellectually can understand. But as I'm watching it, it is such an enjoyable time because it's like, it is so, like, it's really long, but it's just so, it has so many interesting ideas that it executes them almost each of one of them pretty well. And well enough where, like, you're just like, oh, this is the bit where they do this cool thing. This is the bit where they do this cool thing. This is the bit where they do this cool thing. And from a macro level, one of the few times I've ever been prophetic ever. And this, like, I looked up the date. I sent this from the movie theater after watching Avengers Endgame on Twitter. I tweeted, in 30 years, when every film is part of an extended universe, only then will we appreciate the monumental feat that the Russo brothers accomplished with Infinity War and Endgame. It didn't take 30 years. Now, you know, just 5 years later, when every film, like, how many cinematic universe attempts have tried and failed, and, like, the DCEU is gone, all these different, they're trying so much different interconnected yada, 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 and none of it has worked. Not none of it, but most of it has not worked. And whenever people try to do Endgame-type moments, big things like that, it doesn't work. And I think that the feat of Endgame, I think, is the most remarkable. On when we're talking about Endgame itself, not the whole Infinity Saga, because that, you know, you could chalk up to Kevin Feige, is that it really doesn't feel like, it's easy to forget just how many characters are in the movie, and it balances them so well, and Infinity War as well. Like, it just, it is so propulsive and so interesting, and has so many, you know, fun moments with all these characters where you're like, holy shit, this actually is a culmination. It is not a culmination in name only. It's like, if I were to build what the culmination of the first, you know, phases of the MCU would be, yeah, Infinity War Endgame is basically it. That's basically exactly what I would want.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny, as somebody who attended WrestleMania this past weekend and thinking about how wrestling builds to that event as its own culmination, and then just when you think it's over, it continues. Endgame is so interesting to look at from that aspect because of everything that comes after and the way that we now compare what happens now to what that was. And I think to just put that in perspective, the MCU is doing pretty damn good when you can have stuff where people have, and we've gone about this over the past year or two, talking about what's been really bad and what hasn't worked out. And it's because of what it's in comparison to. And what it's in comparison to is really to what Rod said was the greatest cinematic achievement, perhaps. In this idea, comic book movies should not have been this successful. It really is a hell of an achievement. If you really just to think about that by itself, from a technicality standpoint, from a logistics standpoint, they shot the Infinity War and Endgame back to back. All these actors, shuffling them in and out, all these scenes, putting everything together, and the fact that it looked good and it made sense. Both the stories coalesced. It just felt like, it felt good. It was a part one and a part two, and all of it just completely fit. It fit. And I think the fit part of it, when you watch Endgame and getting that, it's our Return of the Jedi. It really is. And I think that part of it, just to think about it in from a historical context, is really cool to think about. And so whenever I watch this movie, I think about all of the moments that we had built up to over the 10 years prior to 2019. I mean, and to get on a deeper level, it just makes me think about how I've grown up with the MCU. When the MCU started, I was 21 years old. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, to think, I mean, how...
You grew up with the MCU.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
I was 12 when the MCU started.
So, like, yeah. In the just big chunks of our lives have been, you know, going on with, you know, in conjunction with this MCU, and that's where when you watch Endgame, I think about it like this movie came out 10 days after my first son was born. Mm-hmm. So just like you think about like all of this and the time that passes by as you think about those moments and Tony and Cap getting back in good standing with each other. Thor figuring out all of his confidence issues from what happened in Infinity War. There's just so many moments that which we'll go through again, but it just, to me, when I think about the MCU as an entirety, like regardless of how this ends, you can never take away how great this truly was. And that's really where it lives and dies with me. But go ahead, Rob.
No, I'll just agree with you. Yeah, this was like, if this is the peak, that's a good peak. Like you know, like it's kind of our fault as fans and just people that, you know, are inundated with content that we just are like, we need 10 all the time, every time, forever, from here, this point on. And so the quote unquote letdown of the MCU, I'd say over the last like 5 years has mostly been nothing's ever getting to that peak again. Mm-hmm. I was just going to say real quick. Also, just nuclear hot takes, right? If Corn Puzzle's listening to this,
yeah, yeah.
I'm sorry. Okay. I know I'm offending some people, but you also had this collection of talent with like a legit I'd say 50 to 75% of these actors giving some of their best acting performances, like in tights, yeah, talking to tennis balls, you know, like giving you layers and depth. And it's been long enough now that I feel comfortable saying, like, the ones that left and kind of tried to move on, or kind of, you know, how Hollywood kind of had this, like, downplaying this, like, this weird anti-Disney peer pressure of, like, oh, you make those movies. But, like, everyone's had a chance to go make their independent films. Everyone's had a chance to make their spinoff films, their own version of their action films.
I see that look on Jake's face right now.
You can just say Chris Evans. You can just say Chris Evans. I'm sorry. Because, like, Robert Downey Jr. won a fucking Oscar. Like, he's clearly doing good work still. But, like, Chris Evans, he's blown it.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's more than him, but yes. Like,
I know, but...
Yeah, there's several people that are just... It's like Zoe Saldana, you're not making another one of these, you know what I'm saying? Like, this, like, and she's an Avatar, but you know what I mean? She ain't, the role isn't one where we're gonna be like, I think of Gamora, I think of you, you know what I'm saying? And I think, it's lightning in a bottle, you know? It's like watching, like, the Celtics or something, where you're just like, damn, every dude's playing great. Not this Celtics, the old Celtics with Larry Bird. It's like every dude on the team is playing great. Like, how do you top this? It's the Miami Heat, you know? Like, and I love that. I'm glad you guys asked me to be on here just so I could rewatch it and have these thoughts of like, oh man, this was magic. You just don't catch this twice. Yeah. We're never getting this from another company. We're never getting this from this company again. This was the peak, and this is a great peak to go out on.
Yeah, I think it's like 7 Oscar winners or whatever in Endgame. Like, there never will be a movie, I don't think, with as much talent acting-wise. And even though it is silly stuff, it is talking to tennis balls or in, you know, green screen sets, I think that you can just tell that they clearly are just, there's a way that they're invigorated by being around such other good talent. Like, I don't even think it's like, oh, they're taking it super seriously. I think it's just like, oh, I'm on a set with some of those charismatic people alive. I have to hold my own. You know what I mean? Like, it's a lot easier for Chris Evans to bring his A game and to really try his hardest when he's, you know, going up against Robert Downey Jr. than if he is, you know, I don't want to say Ana de Armas, but
it's, you know, Kobe remember the Redeem Team?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 08.
Robert Downey Jr. is Kobe, and he's full court pressing every possession, and then that means you can't be, you know, like Joe Johnson or Vince Carter and be like, well, I'm above this. You can't be above it. If the greatest guy involved is not above it, you can't. So yes, Chris Hemsworth is crying to a Rocket Raccoon tennis ball about his mom dying, and I'm believing it. I'm tearing up watching this dude with a beer gut like do this thing, and it's like, that kind of magic is not going to be captured by Jason Momoa is never going to do that as Aquaman. Like, this is just
no.
This was a time, it happened, and we're never getting it back. But man, I'm so thankful for that.
I think that highlights those what makes the MCU. I think I've said it before, and I don't know if you've been on a pod when I've said it, because it's one of the phrases I say over and over again. Is Kevin Feige's greatest talent is not like the planning, it's not the storytelling, it's casting. That's what makes the MCU magical. Like, if you compare it to the DCU, to put it simply, the MCU would never give a major character to an actor as bad as Jason Momoa. Jason Momoa is a fine actor, but he does not have the, I mean, watch Aquaman 2, that movie would be so much better if someone not named Jason Momoa were the lead actor.
Yeah. There's no stunt casting in the MCU. Like, there's no like, oh, this guy's bigger than the part, so let's get him to do it. It's like, no. The part gotta be, you gotta fold into this shit, because this is a machine.
Yeah. And I think that the Endgame is, for the moment, one of the few times in the history of movies where contracts and like money was not really an object. It's like, if the character we have, which is played by an A-list actor, only is going to be in one scene of the script, we can get them, because this is fucking Avengers Endgame. You know what I mean? Like, we can get Rene Russo to show up for one scene if we're going to have this emotional moment. You know what I mean? That scene is, I think, probably one of the most emotionally affecting scenes in the MCU. And it's like a character that honestly most people forgot about, died in a movie most people didn't see. But we're like, no, we're going to get Rene fucking Russo, you know, who is overqualified for this, but she also is like a great actress. You know, yeah. She's not some B-list person from a TV show that they wanted. And we have this great scene. And in most movies, you can't do that because you can't bring in Renee Russo just for one scene because she didn't. But like, Disney correctly was like, let's spend $400 million on this and we'll make the second biggest movie of all time.
And you're acting.
Renee Russo in a movie that a lot of people who did see it hated. Like this movie was so well done. It retconned movies we hated into important movies that matter to the characters, which makes it matter to us. That's the biggest power move of this whole thing is that you're now, like, people are now being like, well, was Thor 2 really, was that that bad? And I'm in the theater like, yeah, he did lose his mama, but I remember being in Thor 2 like, bullshit, ready to leave. When is this going to be? Like, they did that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said for the symmetry of all of the Easter eggs, the closing of stories that we see throughout. I mean, I'll get to that in a little bit, but I mean, to the acting point that you guys both laid out, the Robert Downey Jr. casting, I mean, it can't be said enough of how without that, none of this happens. And none of this looks the way it looks. None of this is as effective as it is. And I just think of his performance in Endgame and kind of like the way that he starts in almost this very lost, like, you know, he lost Peter and he's with Nebula and, you know, he's trying to be kind in a sense, but also like he's kind of losing his mind a little bit. Can't starvation, all of these things happening. And I think Downey just does it in a way. And I think there's this little piece of me that always thinks about, especially when it comes to fathers and sons, the fact that he got to have a conversation with his dad and how a scene like that, you would think it's like, oh, it's just the throwaway scene. It's just something to get to something. But no, him talking about time and you know, not having the amount of time and being, you know, just being present in the moment and being appreciative of the time that you have, knowing that it's not always going to be like that, was something that always hits home. That conversation always hits home with me. And it's almost like you could see, and you know, in watching it, you get a little sad knowing that the outcome is going to be this. But at the same time, it's just such a perfect way to tell a story, and especially Iron Man's story from the way that it started. And just as I think of all of these characters, especially in the main ones, and the way that this movie starts coming off of Endgame, when we talk about performances in Robert Downey Jr.'s performance, I think the way that he rips into Cap at the beginning of that movie is just like some special stuff. It's just the way that he calls him a liar. It's just like, wow. And then just collapses. Just incredible stuff.
They clearly used the CGI from when Captain America was like a 95-pound guy on Tony's chest. Yeah. Because Tony looks so small. And he was just so angry. And he looks so frail. He gets up and he's like in his chest and rips off the arc reactor off his own chest. And you're just like, pathos, acting. Like, you are getting this in a comic book movie, man. I cannot. Yeah. This came from David Hasselhoff as Nick Fury. Okay. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've seen Rivers, my soul has seen Rivers. I saw them painting Lou Ferrigno green as like, look at this the Hulk. We have come so far. I refuse to ever let anyone forget these moments because the peak, we need to hold on to the peaks so that when we have the valleys, we can be like, yo, but they earned the valleys through these peaks. Because man, the acting, it was Shakespearean, some of this stuff in this movie. Yeah.
And the thing that's so special about that scene to me is he's not action movie angry. He plays it. Like, the way that he talks to Steve is the backbone of the movie because you talk to people like that when you care about them. That is how you yell at your brother when he betrays you. That's not how if you're mad at the villain or mad at your boss because they did something horrible, you don't yell at them like that. You yell at someone who... You know, the old meme, what is it? The worst thing about betrayal is it never comes from an enemy. You know? That he is like, my brother betrayed me. We were together, you know? And I think that sets the stage for the movie because the MCU movies as a whole, when they're at their best, are all character-driven. And I think that what they understood really well when making Infinity War and Endgame is that half the population of the world disappearing is something that's impossible to conceive of, and that can never be dramatic. It just can't be. Like, it can be cool to watch some stuff, but you can't, there's no, we can't conceive of that. But we can conceive of losing people. We can conceive of relationships fracturing. And so, like, the point I always make is, like, we at the end of Infinity War, we're not sad that half the world disappeared. We're sad that half of our favorite characters disappeared. Mm-hmm. And the fact that all the characters play the weight of losing the world, but losing the people they care about, I think it sets the tone for, like, obviously the movie's going to be fun because it's a Marvel movie, but it is, when you rewatch it, it is like there's a weight hanging over it for almost the entire runtime where it's like, yeah, this is like a real, these people are wearing this. This is not just a thing that they get off of the mat about. They're like, yeah, I've been sitting in this for 5 years, and you feel that in basically from everyone's performances.
That yeah, something whoever yeah, made yeah, the decision ahead. To after the Cap Tony fight to just hit you with 5 years later is stomach punch every fucking time for me. Like, because we're so used to these guys just solving the problem, you know, in the next scene. Like, oh, I figured it out. This is what we got to do. They were like, 5 years later, it's just like this, guys. They really took this L, and you're gonna have to hold it.
Yeah, and what the great part about that is the fact that they go to Thanos, they kill him, and it's the emptiest killing ever.
It's the first time they're actually really Avengers. It's really the first time they're truly. We can't stop this from getting worse. We're not actually going to prevent anything. We're just going to get revenge. We're going to avenge everyone who was taken out. And it's the emptiest that you feel. Like, it's like they murdered that dude and you're like, yeah, okay.
And shout out to Chris Hemsworth's reaction after he kills Thanos. And there's no Infinity Stones to bring people back. There's nothing left. He just kills him and is like, the way that he says should have gone for the head, just so like distressed, depressed, like completely lost. And the way that it just fades out, everybody just in shock, realizing that there is no win here. There is no W.
And as a writer, watching this movie again today, as a writer, the brilliance of not trying to hit the lines on the nose. Like, they do such a good job of, like, there's moments where, like, oh, you could put a one-liner here that would be cute and kind of quippy. And they just like, no, we're going to just pan away to Ant-Man's face. And he's not going to say the thing. Or, you know, like, Thor's not going to have the great, there's no great closure here where we high five and feel great. It's just dark. And then we'll see these guys in 5 years and it'll be darker. And they, you know, and it probably culminates the best with Tony Stark as a character who always kind of approaches everything just slightly askew. And the only time he really hits you with that like movie one-liner is the I'm Iron Man, but it's delivered like some Shakespearean tragedy shit. It wasn't delivered all cool and like, yeah, but I'm Iron Man. It was delivered with like, and the lines of a man giving the last words of his life. It's just amazing.
Yeah, and it's funny because you look at the way that Tony's story goes within this. The 5 years later happens, Ant-Man shows up, and they're like, we can do this, we can find a way. And Tony's like, I don't know. I feel like I have a good life, I have a kid, and there is this almost sense of peace about him. But it's that talk that he has with Pepper when he figures out the time travel. Once when you realize that, oh, this is like something that he can't let go of, and which ultimately is part of the reason that he meets his demise. But it kind of fits in the whole, like, there's things I gotta fix. I gotta take care of this. I gotta handle this, especially with the relationship that he had built with Peter Parker. So, and that aspect of it, because of what has been built on in the previous films, in Homecoming and Infinity War, Civil War, you have those three as a background to put these things together and really make the loss feel like something for Tony, that he's motivated to get back into the game to help get everybody back.
Here's what always hits me about this movie too. Doctor Strange's entire plan relies on Tony being a hero in the end. Like his, from the time he says his one chance, the one chance is like you'll sacrifice yourself for everybody in the world when the push comes to shove. And damn it, if it's not true, you know, even in the last battle, he's like, if I tell you, it won't happen. And he knows it happening is you finna die for everybody. And damn if he didn't do it, man.
You know, you're talking about panning to reactions. The way that when Strange holds the finger up and they pan to Tony and it's like he realizes, oh, it's this. It's got to be this now. Mm-hmm. It's like that's a sign. And watching it in the theater for the first time, you get the sense that, oh, this is that. And you dread it. And it's like, no. But then you realize it's the only way that this can work. And it's kind of like this catch 22 where you're like, damn, I know we want him to save the world. But does he really have to die? No. And I remember tearing up after that.
They did it so well in the theater. I missed when he got the stones. It was like they were struggling. And when Thanos is about to slap the glove, I'm like, what the fuck kind of movie is this? we didn't sit through 2 hours and 45 minutes for this bullshit. And then it cuts and I'm like, how did he get those stones? You know, of course, now watching it many times later, I'm like, oh, it's his tech and all this stuff. But man, what a moment, dude.
Yeah, I think it's set up really well where, like, I remember not to be like, well, I actually got, but when I remember when I had the moment where he went to snap, I had the thought of, oh, this is great. Because I put it together, I'm like, oh my god, the nanotech. That's how they're gonna do it. Cause they just show you enough previously. They show you just enough that it's the nano that it's like, oh shit. Like that's such a good cause it's really cause it's there's something so cathartic about the empty snap, you know?
Yeah.
And I love that by the way. I love when a movie, I think the best movies give you stuff where you could have put it together and you just you know, Jake put it together right away. I know all this stuff from the time I'm a kid.
No,
I
for the record, I don't put together shit all the time. Just in this specific instance, I did.
I'm saying in this case, right? This case,
yeah.
I'm normally 10 steps ahead of movies and stuff anyway, right? But in this case, man, they got me. I'm like, well what? He got the what did he? Does he know like some sleight of hand? Like, did he pickpocket this movie? Like, how are they gonna explain this plot hole? And of course, you know, I get home or I go see it for the 20th time in the theater. I'm like, oh yeah, because it's his. Oh yeah, yeah. Of course, he's been doing this for. But man, what a moment! What a movie!
So you talk about that moment, and I was looking at some of your tweets, Rod, before the show started, and one that you noticed is a show that you frequently guested on with us, Secret Invasion, and One Mr. Rhodes. And the fact that as Tony lays there dying, we have Rhodey there, and looking in retrospect now with Secret Invasion in the books with the whole Skrull thing. That's a bit of a tough look after seeing that movie.
And you know? He's crying at the reading of the will, basically too, man. Listen, that made me as mad as J. Cole apologizing to Kendrick. Like, I'm like, there are rules to this shit, man. You don't do. There's certain things you know not to touch. Whoever thought that was clever. Step forward. I want to know your name. I want to know who, because they better clean that up somehow. I don't know how they're gonna clean that up, but they better fucking explain that shit a different way. Because there's no way this is a goddamn scroll the whole time. It's no way, bro.
Point out exactly what it is. The problem with it is it's clever, and that's not a good reason to do something.
No,
you know what I mean? Right. Like it is purely a like, oh, isn't it so crazy? And it's like. It's like, isn't it so crazy? You're going to reconsider all the moments Rhodey had in the time. And it's like, but what if when we reconsider them, it makes them worse? Like, it just, like, it doesn't actually, it's not enriching.
Right.
It's okay, so this Rhodey Skrull was, like, a really good actor? What the fuck do you want me to take out of that?
Yes. It just doesn't make sense, man. And I know someone thought it was so smart because it was like, ooh, it's Don Cheadle. So it's one of the A-listers. It's not, like, just some person in the background. And P. people love that character. They're going to feel so betrayed and shocked. And shock value is not always good. You know what I mean? Like, you can, take a shit on the table at a restaurant. It's shocking. It's not good. You know what I mean? And I did feel white hot anger tonight, watching that scene again. I was like, oh, you motherfuckers. Motherfuckers. Who did this? Who did this? I want names. I want fucking job titles. But, I'm trying not to get too caught up in that because it's an appreciation moment that I'm trying to have. But the Secret Wars,
of course,
they can suck the biggest part of my balls.
Now that's a statement. Oh my goodness. But yeah, I think, and it's funny because it's like you look at that scene and Tom Holland, who again in Infinity War and Endgame, even in Endgame in his brief scenes, acting his ass off at the end there with the crying. Like, that's just like, he's just as good. So good. So good. I want to give Tom Holland a lot of credit because, man, he is our Spider-Man. He is our Peter Parker. It's just beautiful to see. So, to your point, to have that mixed with that, just it doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel good to have. But in terms of, like, other things, is there any other particular character story or moment, Rod, that kind of stands out to you? Like, I'll just say this quickly. I think we have all made jokes in the past about how Steve Rogers gets to have the happy ending with Peggy and he ain't go back in time to help black folk in the 1940s and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I always think about the Captain America, the First Avenger movie and the way that that ended. And people have their thoughts about that movie in general, but I thought it was one of the more powerful endings of an MCU movie. Mm-hmm. Just the idea of waking up to everybody gone and, you know, Nick Fury asks him if he's okay, and he's like, I had a date. And that's just how the movie ends. It's just like, yo, that's some powerful stuff. So him being at that S.H.I.E.L.D. facility and seeing Peggy there, he's like, this is the first time. He's like, oh, I thought I lost this moment. Let me go actually get it back. Thinking about it as we continue, I know at the time we enjoyed that and we had fun with that. How do you feel about seeing that story and how that closed for Cap?
So there's a couple things you got to know about me. I married my high school sweetheart, right? So there are certain motivations in movies that I know I'm the opposite of most people. But Doctor Strange deciding in What If, like, I just want this woman so bad, if the rest of y'all got to die, that's just what got to happen. totally relate, you know? Cap being like, I did my part. I mean, we know he picked up the hammer, so he's worthy. He went back and he knew the rules. You can't fuck with time. He's like, well, I'm going to be with my boo and get old together the way that I deserve. He gave everything for not just his country, but the universe. I've never had a problem with that man going back. What was he going to do? Stop racism? I'm sorry, y'all, but no shields can stop racism. You could have blocked that bullet from MLK and then somebody would have got him a different way or some shit. What did Tony tell Cap? When you mess with time, time messes with you back. So I've never had a problem with that, but I love that moment. The Thor moment with his mom. Once again, just great acting and stuff made me care about something I did not care about at all before that moment, which sounds cold because his mama did die, but I'll be damned if that shit didn't. I was like,
it doesn't work.
Moving on.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Can I also give another defense of the Steve moment? For one, obviously, there's something, a phenomenon that happens a lot on Twitter where something will start off as a joke and then people start to take it seriously. The civil rights thing was a joke. And then I've heard people say completely honestly, like, well, he goes back in time. It doesn't, like, what the fuck are you talking about? This movie. Do you not like movies? It's not about being perfect in the world. Like, stop it.
Also, do you know how fucking mad nerds would have been if the post credits to Endgame was like, and Captain America solved racism? They would be like, what?
No. Yeah, it's like, it's cuts to him and like doing a sit in. Like, what the fuck are you talking
about? Right. There will be no more racism in the MCU after this movie because the next movie, when Sam picks up the shield, no one thinks it's a big deal. They're just like, okay, and I don't. Yeah. Well,
the next film reveal is George Wallace. Like, stop it. stop it. He saved the universe.
That'll be like a great what if. Is what if Captain America goes back and just tries to stop racism?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway,
that's a great one.
See him with Malcolm X and MLK just chilling.
He's like throwing the shield into Jesse Helms and stuff. Just like, what was he doing?
Yeah, throwing the shield off the walls of Congress to knock over Strom Thurmond when he's filibustering the civil rights. I just don't know what people want. People are always so weird about that.
So weird.
But anyway, no. He goes back in time. But I think the thing that works is that I think that Steve's decision works because it's in tandem with Tony's decision. That you have characters, one who's super hedonistic and only does things for his pleasure, and one who is super altruistic and only does things for other people. And their arcs as characters is to make the opposite decision. That is called storytelling. It's beautiful. And I think the Tony thing is really obvious because we see that all the time in storytelling. All the time we see characters that are super selfish that then make a heroic sacrifice. A formerly selfish person killing themselves to save other people is a storytelling trope as old as time. The opposite is less common because in a lot of ways it feels like they're becoming a worse person. But to a certain extent, Steve is the type of person who's so altruistic that he ends up not... Steve is altruistic to the point where like it's actually more of like a self-denial than it is about helping other people. Like clearly he doesn't feel like he's worthy of living a good life to start off. That's kind of where the root is. And eventually when he has this life, when he does actually save a lot of people, he is able to come to a place where he feels comfortable enough in what he has done, in the amount of good he has done, where he can say, you know what? I feel good enough about myself and what I've done for the world that I'm able to accept love and able to accept a good life. And I think that is as compelling an arc as Tony's. It's just not super common. So it's just like, he made a selfish decision. It's like, yeah, the dude saved the universe. I think he's entitled to, you know, have sex with Haley Atwell. Thank you very much. It's a pretty good life for him.
Listen,
and he gives he gives Sam the shield at the end, which is like such a dope moment to me. So yeah, I totally agree. I always thought that that joke went too far and it became like its own thing that I acknowledge as a joke only, but just don't engage in rigorously.
Yeah, that's a funny joke.
Yeah. I will always I'm always here for some jokes. Like that's totally cool. You were talking about other character moments. Scott Lang seeing his daughter grown, like basically a tween now. That moment where he's like going down the streets of San Francisco and there's just trash in every neighborhood and he stops the kid like, what happened? And the kid's like, what? And just keeps going. Like those moments like that, they just kind of nail. And like, I feel like a lesser movie, you know, Michael Bay would have had, you know, the Asian security guard that was watching the thing do some like sticky funny, like, ha ha ha, you know, moments. And instead it's just like, no, it's just, there's, like I said, it's the restraint from the quippy one-liners and stuff that normally feels so forced into all these type of hero movies to make us feel good and laugh and get through scenes. And there's a lot of moments where there's just not that. Steve and that like survivor's guilt group, so smart, because he's the ultimate survivor's guilt. Like he's actually been through this before. Everyone he knew died except Bucky. You know, like he just came back and he's like, oh yeah, I guess a few billion people have passed, you know, and this is not the world. So him leading that group and, you know, talking to the dude about like the date he's going on and how you just got to keep going. And
we got to talk about the fact that Joe Russo cast himself as the first gay guy.
I didn't notice that.
Just one of the craziest things that anyone's ever done. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but that's insane that he did that.
I know.
Made a big deal about it beforehand. The fact they made a big deal about it beforehand is the problem.
Also, like, man, I'd do that if I was him.
I get it on some level.
Absolutely.
It's like, hey, I had to do it. It was such a big responsibility. I had to be the guy to offhandedly say him when talking about a date.
You know what that is, dog? That is the Steph Curry from the logo. You know what I mean? Like, just this one's for me, guys. Like, I've given everyone enough jumpers by the line. That's like it.
It's the Steph Curry from the logo of like forced allyship. It's like, I'm such an ally, I'm gonna be the gay guy.
Yeah. That was Steph dancing and doing all the shit, man. Like he, because I think what he was really saying is, this movie's so good, this won't even matter. Like, I can play this role. You can play this role. Anyone can play this role. I made a dope movie. No one's gonna ever even think about this, but three nerds on a fucking Wednesday. Yeah. 5 years.
It, I mean, it is. I will say this: it is might be the most common joke that friend of the show Michael Springthorpe makes, and I appreciate it every time he does. But yes, it is a thing we joke about it a lot because it is just so funny that he did that.
It is so funny. God. It's so ridiculous.
No, it is funny.
It's like I said. I know that.
I'm glad he did.
He knew he had one. That's all. Like all every when I saw that scene today, I thought, because you knew you had one. You knew, because if it was whack, we would have been all over that dude. Like, man, really? You couldn't find a gay guy to do this or whatever? He's like, I got it. Don't worry about it. No one's gonna say a word.
Yeah, man. I mean, you think about like the Cap stuff and the Tony stuff, and again, like to the symmetry of it, their conversation in Avengers where they're nose to nose, and it's like you ain't gonna cut the wire.
Oh, yeah. Well,
no, you ain't gonna lay yourself on the line. And then Tony's like, I'll cut the wire, but nah. And this, he really did the thing.
And
so
I'll run through a couple more because I know you said character moments.
Yeah,
obviously. Nebula.
Oh yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Obviously,
go.
Nebula. Right.
No, knock it out. Yeah.
Like such a character that
put a pin in that.
Yeah, if you would have said she was going to be the linchpin of the third arc of this movie, I've been like, you're out of your fucking mind. She's not even in the top 20 people in this franchise, and she fucking kills it. She has tears coming out of her black eyes. Her eyes are black as coal. You can't even see, but you can see the water because she was acting, Karen Gillan was acting like that. That moment, and I know this is very controversial. Once again, I'm just showing a lot of love and appreciation, but Clint, and the Scarlet, Quint and Natasha.
That was legitimately great. That was
Like the two people with no powers, just like going to another planet completely out of their element and not realizing one of them has to die, and then fighting to the opposite
to
death.
Die.
Like no one fight. When we say fight to the death, we mean the opposite of what that shit was. These motherfuckers fought to the live or whatever. And like, it was such great pathos and such, I get the misgivings about Clint and his proclivities in 5 years. Like, I'm not going to defend that shit. That was pretty whack for him to do that. But totally within character. Let me just say. Not for a second did I go.
I think that that's another thing where the joke has become too much. We're like, like people act like it's like a gotcha. Like, did you realize that he was going around the world killing people? It's like, that's in the movie. Yeah, that's the text.
Yeah,
of the movie.
The movie.
Dude, that's not a gotcha. Like, he did really bad stuff. We know.
The only thing the movie doesn't put together is like, it seemed like you're killing a lot of not white people. You know what I mean? Like, that's the only thing the movie didn't say. But in my mind, he killed some Russians first. Like if we went through his whole resume, he stopped at all the Liam Neeson countries and gave them some.
Also, it allowed us to have one scene of Haruki Sanada in the movie, and so I'll take that. It was worth it,
bruh. That scene, it could be its own fucking movie, dog. That the neon lights. The Javanese, the fucking swords.
Like, people are going to look me in the eye and tell me that there's a cooler gang to have a shootout sort out than with the Yakuza. Stop it. The Yakuza is the most cinematic gang. That's why they did it. It looks cool.
I hate to say it. Low-key, coolest Hawkeye's ever been.
Oh,
I hate
to say
it. Because I know he's a hero every time.
He's got the J6 cut. He's got the J6 haircut, but other than that.
Yep. Yeah, other than that, but it fit. When he showed the haircut, I said, that's what he would have done. He would have got the haircut before he killed them brown people, man. You don't go kill a bunch of brown people with the haircut he used to have. That made so much sense. Oh. But yeah, I think I've run through everybody. So yeah, at least for me, I'm sure there's other characters, but those are the main ones.
Yeah.
I mean, shoot, the Anya left. Montage, like portals hits different, always does, every single time. Every single time you see everybody come back, the Guardians come back, Spidey, Strange, Wanda, Bruh. How about Wanda having Thanos in Bruh. Jail?
If like, you would say he in trouble.
Bruh, have y'all seen have y'all ever seen the movie I'm gonna get you sucker? I'm gonna get you sucker.
Yeah, I have.
Okay. This is such a deep cut, and I forgive me if no one else knows this reference, but it's when Dawn threw Damon Wayne's character up against the wall, and because she was on her period and she got superpowers because he was trying to like threaten her, and he starts screaming very high pitched like and then Kadeem Hardison comes over and knocks her out with like a brick or something from behind, and he's like, bro, what happened to you? Like, what? Like, he's like, man, you didn't hear me yelling for help. He was like, yeah, you were screaming like, like a bitch. He was like, no, I wasn't. I was saying, come get her off of me. Come get this. And that's what Thanos looks like when Wanda puts him in there. Yes. And now, and he goes, like, he says something like fire, rain, or rain, fire. And it's just like,
yeah, and then the homie is like, yo, wait a minute, you want fire? That's on all of our, they'll do it now.
He had this man up against that wall, bruh. He ain't no way out. She could have beat him by herself. She was that bad. And that's why I will never hate that Doctor Strange movie. She is the scariest person in the damn MCU. Like, Unleash Wanda should make everyone tremble in their boots, because Thanos was trembling in his boots during that. He wasn't as afraid of Captain Marvel as he was of this woman who he said, I don't even know who you are. Oh, he did by the end of that damn chokehold he did.
Yeah, she hit him with the you will. And it was like, oh, yeah, it got real after Ooh. That. I did love the gauntlet pass around. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Everybody kind of interacting with each other. That was cool too.
It's a cinematic idea. Like the thing about it is that like the final fight scene is my biggest complaint with the final fight scene is that it takes place in nowhere, but right. Not the planet. I mean, like the fact that it just looks completely anonymous, but the thing is they have a lot of interesting ideas of how to break the fight up into different segments and keep you engaged the entire time, which is easier said than done. You can easily imagine a fight scene with this many characters feeling like none of the individual characters matter.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, after we've done the Age of Ultron and the Sokovia Accords, having it in a populated place is people are gonna feel a way about fair. That shit again.
I agree. It's fair.
Yeah, and then in the movie before that, we had fights in like other galaxies and shit. They were like fighting everywhere. So you knew it was going to end up being a place that it was just going to be us versus y'all. But listen, on your left cap hits every time. Mm-hmm. And the brilliance of it is that you still have Tony, Thor, and Steve fighting Thanos for like 10 minutes. Like they fought that dude. And he was like whooping their ass, but it was like, you know, give and go. He breaks the shield and Steve like tightens it up on his like cut arm. And you're just like, damn. And like you see the army amassing and you're just like, Steve gonna die? like
yeah, there's so much. What I love is there's so much build up to that moment, because it's like you could even go back further to when Smart Hulk snaps.
Yes.
And that whole scene, the build up to that was awesome.
Yes.
And when the Thanos army comes through the portal and they blow up the Avengers compound, like that shit was crazy. Yeah. Like the whole thing, the whole buildup was so well done.
I would like it. So I said a TV series, but maybe that's too ambitious. A Marvel shorts, like a 15-minute thing of just Doctor Strange and them organizing the portals would be amazing. From a comedic perspective, it would have to be, because I just imagine it's herding cats. It's, you know, it's like, you know, all right, so what line are we going to say when we come in? Like, you know, like everyone going around the room, like, oh, we're going to say this, my catchphrase, no. And it's on your left cap.
Who's going to be up front? It's like, why? So wait, the group is, it's like, this is the Wakandan group, but like, why are they the three up front? Why can't everyone be, you know?
Yeah. Yes, I feel like all the black heroes, like, unite behind that. Like, it should be them. I mean, we fought in their country last, you know, all that shit. And I feel like Sam, the way they had the audio of Sam saying, like, on your left cap, it's just so brilliant. It's just like a little detail, but because it's like Hope is in his ear, but it's so quiet, and you're like, we've given up hope at this point. We're like, oh god, the Avengers are gonna lose. And it's like, on your left, Cap on your left. And you're like, oh my god, here they come through the portals. Bucky, he needs 5 minutes to go get his guns because he shows up with the heat. Like, you know, like there's so many moments I want to see. Like, and I just feel like Doctor Strange is the perfect person, like the straight man in this comedy, to be annoyed with everyone's million different like thing of like, all right, let me make a portal for this guy to get his gun and this shit. And then, you know, Wong's like, you know, I even love the moment of Wong being like, what? That's not enough portals? Or what? Like, I loved all that stuff. But yeah, it was so
you want more? Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, throughout the movie, there's just so many scenes. I mean, obviously, we talk about the final one. I was a big fan of the idea of them going back to previous events in time that they visited. And just like the logistical conversation that they all have before they make the trip about which Infinity Stone is where, Thor's explanation of it as he's drunk and just like he's just like completely out of it and stuff like that. And then Black Widow realizing like, wait a minute, 2012, you could just pick up like three of these stones and just get
and the heist, like all going Ant-Man being the guy who understands the heist but not time travel is so smart because that is Scott Lang. To a T is like, I do know how to steal shit. And of course, like all movies, heist gotta go wrong. So when Loki gets that thing, and you, cause like in the movie thing, I'm just like, how they gonna fix this? And they're, it's like, oh, we'll go back even further and revisit another MCU movie. And that's why I say this movie, it won't be duplicated, because it is a love letter to all the movies in the MCU before it. Like it appreciates those movies as much as the nerdiest nerd who watched those movies appreciates those movies. So it is us going like, damn, Thor got the axe now. He don't got the hammer. And then being like, no, you can go back and get the hammer now. Now you got the hammer and the axe. And it's just super nerd orgasm when you see him dual wielding the hammer. And it's such a little thing. But it's stuff like that all throughout this movie. You know, it is
Loki. Oh, it's crafted so well.
The conversation every with callback. Loki after he's in cuffs and they're like, just got to go take the elevator down. You know, this mundane thing, which is this kind of stuff I love as a comedy person of like, oh man, like how you get Loki downstairs is funny. What if we revisit that moment and not the like him getting slammed puny god? It's more funny when he's got cuffs on him and they're like, all right, so I guess we turn him over to S.H.I.E.L.D. now. That is so good. And so, yeah, this movie.
Cap in the elevator saying Hail Hydra, like that whole thing from Winter Soldier. Like, yo, like all of these things just hit all over throughout the movie. They're hitting on all these Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? That we watch.
Did y'all watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
I watched up to a point. Okay, I watched it maybe like season 2 or 3.
Okay, yeah. So you saw the part. When those guys show up, they get the shit, and you're like, those the bad guys from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And you have that moment of like, oh, wait, but they know now that those are the bad guys. And the way he plays that, like, because we were all waiting on it, right? We were all waiting on like, all right, if anybody wants to get out, you know, and he stays just like, Hail Hydra, you're like, fuck, so smart, so brilliant.
to Jake's point about like actors, yo, they got Robert Redford back for that.
And there's a little fun thing about that, that he had the movie he made previous before that, The Old Man and the Gun, the whole press tour was, this is Robert Redford's final movie. That you can read interviews, he's talking about my final movie, because he couldn't say that he was in Endgame. So Robert Redford, one of the most legendary actors of all time, his final screen credit, unless something changes, will be Avengers Endgame. I want to talk about quickly, because we're going through the plot. I think that's important about this movie is that it is just insane the cultural impact it has had. And I think that people who want to poo-poo the MCU will be like, this is just a bunch of callbacks for nerds or whatever. But, like, everyone knows what the snap is. Everyone knows who Thanos is. Like, this specific movie has so much, you know... Like, there's a whole bit in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem where they're talking about how Mark Ruffalo improvised the scene at the diner. Like, it is just a totemic movie in that way, in that, like, I think that's a thing that other franchises won't be able to capture either, because, like,
yeah.
Is there anything, are there references in the entirety of the DCEU combined than in just this movie? You know, like, I think it's just, there's just a way that it's, this movie is iconic in a way that you can imagine it not being. You can imagine, like, oh, they're just playing the hits from the other stuff. It's not as iconic as what came before. But, like, no, this movie in itself is, like, as iconic as anything else in the MCU, which I think is, once again, really saying something.
Yeah. If you go back and watch this today, it still hits, man. And we've seen, and that's hitting after we've seen all the other shit after it and everyone else's attempt. Mm-hmm. And it still hits different than that other stuff, man. And I don't think there's anything wrong with recognizing that. I think what happens in nerd culture is a lot of times it can get a little toxic. It can turn too much to the negative, and then this becomes like, well, we expect the great stuff and we just think that's okay. And the good and the bad stuff, that's what it really is, the problem, the bad stuff. And it's like, but we don't recognize when it's great. Saying something's bad all the time doesn't, that means nothing to me now, because you think everything's bad and we never give credit. I think in order to hate Secret War, Secret Invasion, you need to love this movie. So you can be like,
agreed.
That, like, cause then at least you're calling balls and strikes. You're being fair. You're like, no, this sucked. And this is, let me tell you why it sucked. I got 37 reasons it sucked. Now, this was good. Do more of this. Like, so I think this is the ultimate, this was good for the MCU. So shout out to the Russo brothers too for, I mean, what? We got Winter Soldier. We got Civil War. And then Civil we got War? Endgame and Infinity War. Bruh.
Infinity War?
Like, man. They really, honestly, I'm glad they made that deal with the devil to make them good at directing Marvel movies. And then the price, of course, was that they weren't able to direct anything good afterwards.
Right.
And so, you know, it's really insane to watch The Gray Man and be like, these people made a movie I liked. That's just kind of crazy.
Listen, in defense of The Gray Man, because I did watch that, it is a really good Impossible White Man film. It's a bad film,
yeah,
which is fine.
Yeah.
But there's a genre of movie, Impossible White Man, where I will watch a white man kill 90 people. I mean, for no reason.
Shout out to Reacher.
But I think you and I are in agreement here, where it's like, if the bar is I will watch, then like, there's a lot of movies. I'm not, talking about. Yeah. I'll watch a lot of movies.
I'm not defending. Like, I might watch. Yeah. I'm not defending the cinematic quality of The Gray Man as much as I am at just saying it is an ode to a genre that I love. And so as an entry into the Impossible White Man genre, it stands in that respect. As a movie where you would like acting and you know, things that are believable.
More than anything, it just looks, no, the biggest thing about it is it just looks horrible. It is like one of the worst. It costs like $200 million, and it looks both.
It's very drab.
It's drab. Like the lighting's terrible. Is a lot of bad green screens. A lot of bad. Like, it's just like, oh shit, these guys, they lost it. But anyway, they made a great movie here. So shouts to you, Anthony and Joe.
Didn't they also do a movie with Chadwick, like the 13 something?
Yeah, 12 Rounds.
No, 12 Rounds, the John Cena movie. And they produced 21 Bridges. They didn't direct it.
21 Bridges, okay.
Oh, yeah, why did I confuse
12 Rounds, the John Cena movie. I haven't seen 21 Bridges, but I have seen 12 Rounds.
Actually, 21 Bridges is not terrible.
I've heard it's good. Okay. 12 Rounds is not good.
Okay.
Yeah, 12 Rounds is not good.
Shout out to them, because if I was those guys, y'all would never be able to tell me shit either.
I know. They produced Everything Ever All at Once. They've done good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Directing.
It's hard.
The funny thing, too, is that like they were the directing producers on my favorite television show of all time, Community. And so when they started directing MCU movies, I'm like, holy shit, the people who directed my favorite show ever are now directing MCU movies. They direct the movies I love. And, you know, I hope whatever they do next is good.
You know what it is, Jake? It's Phil Jackson. Mm-hmm. It's Phil Jackson. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm. Yep. Phil's like, give me MJ and Kobe. I'll figure this shit out. But, oh, y'all want me to win with Randy Brown? Like, pardon me? Mm-hmm. What did y'all expect from me? Nah, man. Second round knockout. We out of here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, come on, Genie. Yeah. Let's go.
Yeah.
I want... I do want to spin this a little forward, as when I think about, because I was just thinking about, because I saw earlier today that, oh, the Boys season 4 is completed and ready for release in June. I mean, you think about what the MCU created and to the point of Endgame and what has come after that and what it has allowed to enter the not only TV, but movies as well. I mean, stuff like The Boys, stuff like Invincible, all of those particular things have now entered the space, and none of that is possible without the success that, that Marvel has had.
I take it one step further and say Zack Snyder's DCEU is a response to, because what happened is what happens is that the MCU is so, it tackled the casting, as Jake pointed out, it tackles the casting so well that the heroes are actually like earnest and people that you know are trying to do their best. And the cynicism doesn't necessarily come from within the hero. The cynicism comes from the world, right? That they're trying to change. It's, you know, it's Captain America finding out like S.H.I.E.L.D. has nukes or whatever. You know, it's not like Captain America's like, nuke those motherfuckers. Everything since then, we've had so many like, what if Superman was evil? What if Batman killed people? What if, you know, and The Boys is kind of, what if Superman was evil? You know, Invincible's kind of, what if Superman was evil? And I'm not denigrating those, but I'm just saying, like, that's how much of an impact the MCU had. Even the people that zag off the MCU are still being influenced by, like, trying to do something inspired by the MCU.
Yeah. I mean, creating something like this, which is, you know, for everything that we read and find out that they don't actually, you know, it's not as intricate as it seems. The fact that it does come off that way, and it did for so long in a way that really seemingly worked out perfectly for a decade, is insanity to me. That aspect of it is not lost on me at all, as we've built to a point where they could have this run after the fact where a No Way Home could exist.
Also, it's very difficult, right? Like, because, like, what a lot of people think making a movie is like a person comes up with an idea, writes a script, and then a movie's done off of that. And sometimes the brilliance is in the editing bay. You know, sometimes it's in the reshoots. You know, sometimes it's in the person that goes, man, I think they fucked this up in this other movie. We dropped the ball. And then going, no, but we can retcon that. And now Thor's mom is in this, and now it does, now it is good. And you know, Iron Man 3 was a movie for me where I saw Iron Man 3 in the theater and I didn't get it, and I'll regret that for the rest of my life, because now it's one of my favorite movies ever. But it took them making it matter. Like, it helped when they were like, yo, this man got PTSD and want to put a suit of armor around the whole world. And when Tony says that to them, like, I had a vision. Remember how we hated that in Ultron, like, these fake ass commercials? But he's like, I thought it was a dream. But no, I should have been, and y'all should have been helping me put a fucking suit of armor around the world. And I'm like, look at y'all retconning stuff that we were like, bullshit. That's the power of the whole, like, machine coming together to work on these problems, not just like a person with a great idea and then, you know, yada, 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 perfect movie.
I mean, I think the thing people, I think, mistake, it's actually the opposite of what people think makes a good cinematic universe, where people think that meticulously planning out everything is what makes it good, when actually being open to adjusting on the fly, but not making it seamless. Whereas, like, not like, and then I say it's seamless because, like, what you don't want to do is like Rise of Skywalker and like basically say like everything we did doesn't matter. You know what I mean? And Marvel never does that. But like finding a way to not negate what happened previously, but to be able to course correct and to not be so married to a certain idea you have. And I think that that is what makes, like, Endgame, so much of the stuff that happens in Endgame feels like it has been being set up for, you know, the past 7-8 years. But going back to the Avengers, people, it feels like Endgame is inevitable from the first Avengers movie, but they weren't thinking about Endgame when they made the first Avengers movie. The reason it works is because they, when they were writing Endgame, they're like, let's put all of these nuggets in, put these callbacks in here, so it feels like it's connected. Because instead of putting a bridge forward, they're building a bridge behind themselves to connect things in post, which is, I think, how you make storytelling that is both satisfying, but also like able to respond to audience pressure, which is not always a bad thing.
I mean, to that point, like adjusting on the fly, like just even something as simple as James Gunn not being happy that Gamora got killed off and him trying to fix that for Guardians Volume 3 and what ended up coming out, which I think was a truly wonderful way of telling the end of Peter and Gamora's story and finding a way to do it without doing the usual, well, they'll find a way back to each other. But having a relationship and an understanding that, hey, we had this time, but this is a different time for both of us, and we can accept that and be cool with it, as opposed to just like forcing something. So like even some stuff like off that, you got to give credit to the minds that are behind this and being able to put stuff like that together in something that was something that he wasn't happy with, but was able to make the best out of it. Like, you get stuff like that too after the fact. That's why, like, where I'll be like phase, you know, a lot of phase four gets shit on a lot, and, you know, phase five to a degree. And I'll, you know, give the critics some, you know, kudos for, in the sense for, like, there's some of the stuff that you can understand, but also I feel like there's still a lot of good. And I just think you have to look at it from the perspective of, what are we comparing this to? We're comparing this to something just incredible.
I'm a Charlotte Hornets fan. You know, I don't know who y'all cheer for in the NBA or whatnot.
I mean, I've been the Knicks, Jets. The Yankees is really the only team that I've been winning in my lifetime.
Okay. So, unfortunately. And Jets for you too. Okay.
Jets, and yeah, unlike him, I'm a Mets fan, so my life has been nothing but misery since I was born.
So then we can all relate on most levels except for the Yankees thing. MCU fans sound like Yankees fans. You know, where you're just like, why don't we win the championship every year? And I'm a Hornets fan going like, what the fuck are you talking about? I'm like, oh, we made the playoffs we made the play-in 2 years ago. What a great season we had. Remember that? And what has happened now is like if somehow the MCU goes to the finals but loses 4-3, it's like, what a shitty year. What a shitty year we had. And the highs don't count anymore. It's only the valleys. And I think in a weird way, God damn, Brandon Miller. I'm sorry. Brandon Miller just dunked on the
No.
Way. So all sad. Good.
No. I'm sorry. Anyway. But there's something to it about, like, we don't get to enjoy the Brandon Miller dunk because we're only looking for the championship. If it's not LeBron or Buzz, we don't give a fuck. And it kind of fucked up what I loved about nerd culture before, like, and it's not their fault, but before Endgame, I really loved that we all were waiting on something to build and looking forward to it. And now it's become like, and part is also because of Disney Plus, but now it's kind of become like, more content. Are we doing another? Are we still playing basketball, guys? We're not over basketball yet, you know?
You know what it's like? It's that the best, my favorite meal I've ever had was at a restaurant called, I think, Saraceno's on the Boston's North End. It was a shrimp and scallop fettuccine Alfredo. And it was delicious. It was my favorite meal I've ever had. I think I was like 18. I was visiting Emerson College. And because of that, the tilapia I made for myself today was disgusting because it wasn't as good as that. It wasn't as good as that, so it's bad. Every other meal I've had, I want to vomit. Ugh. Why can't every meal be as good as what my favorite meal I've ever had? And it's like, if I were to burn the tilapia, you know, or undercook it, it would be gross. I can say that. But like, is it good? Am I satisfied that I ate tilapia tonight? Yes, I am. Which is, in this essay, I'll explain why I enjoyed Moon Knight. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm talking. I mean,
it's pretty amazing. Like, the same perfect, the perfect amount of events that brought the MCU to its heights, in some ways, the imperfect events coming together has led to what it currently is in terms of its critiquing and criticism. And, you know, nothing can be mentioned about the MCU changing drastically without mentioning the passing of Chadwick Boseman and how that greatly affected everything that they were going to.
And like, that's the other thing I wrote down earlier. They had an incredible run of off-screen luck. Just like an incredible run of just like so many people being involved in all these projects and just not
getting disgruntled.
No one. We still don't have an like on set thing. Like, do you understand mm-hmm. how hard that is? Like, no one ever pissed yeah. anyone off and like got busted. Yeah. Like, oh, you know, this guy.
Well, not anything that got out publicly.
But yeah. in the age of yeah. the fucking yeah. cell phone and social media, yeah. that is,
yeah. and even, right. even happened, privately, it's not as bad as even other things.
Yeah,
it's like it's one or two incidents as opposed to like. I think the biggest thing there is real. I think it's just Robert Downey Jr. set the tone, and I think yeah. that like by all accounts, especially like with something like Endgame, where you have all these. Like, right. from what I've heard, like, you know, be hearing behind-the-scenes stuff is, like, if you're, you know, a Chris Pratt, you can't really act that much like a dick on the set of Endgame because Robert Downey Jr. is ahead of you on the call sheet, yeah. and if he's not acting like a dick, then you it's don't Tim, have a right to act like
Tim,
a dick.
It's Tim Duncan letting Popovich cuss him out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, like, well, okay, mm-hmm. so what you yep. gonna do? Nothing. He's cussing out the best player in the goddamn team. It's... We all get cussed out. That's what we do now. But yeah, it's an incredible run of just like some of it's just luck. And so now some of their luck is finally coming due, you know, the Jonathan Majors thing, the stuff where the pandemic hits and all of a sudden all these studios going to like a content cranking out machine. And the quality of your CGI and stuff ends up going down because you're overworking people and you're trying to do like Star Wars and this and that. Like it's gonna everything crescendos because eventually it comes down. And I think it crescendoed, you know, like we hit that end game, that Infinity War, and now it's gotta come down. I would just say their come down is still higher than most people's. Like yeah. come up and it is what it is, and this will fizzle out eventually. I don't know what the last thing will be that'll make us go like, all right, we're moving on, but it'll fizzle out eventually. But right now, like they still got a puncher's chance every time they put something out, so they're gonna keep doing it.
I will just say this, as you mentioned that, Rod, especially after the events of today, and we'll talk about it later this week, but what they have with X-Men 97 is something special. Mm-hmm. And that has to be said. That show is special. I did not think it would be that. I thought it would just be like a nice nostalgia ploy, but buddy, I have to admit, I am shocked.
This is why you didn't cancel your Disney Plus. You know, y'all said you're going to do it. Not you two specifically, but you know what I mean? Everyone listening. Y'all had our moment.
I can write it off on my taxes. So
yeah, yeah, me too. But we all had our moments, you know, of like, well, if this is all y'all got, then why should I even? And then just, you know, they just know like once every 2 to 3 months, they need to put something out. And just if a couple of those things are hitting, like the way X-Men 97 is hitting, it's undeniable. And now we're back. Like I've seen everyone's like watching this show. I thought we all were out, guys. We're not out. We're never out. If they keep making good stuff. Yeah. So they just got to keep making good stuff.
It's easy to take a shot at the king. When you're the king, it's easy to take shots. And people have been taking shots for a couple years now. So we'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes. There's always an opportunity.
What do y'all think about the fact that they're not going to have movies this year? Because I love it. I think we need a lull.
I think it's great.
Yeah,
the one Deadpool movie in the right smack dab in the summer. I really think is perfect. It kind of builds back the anticipation uh-huh. for stuff to come yep. out. Yes, yeah.
And I really want to see other movies. And this is the petty in me, guys. Okay, once again, I described it as a sports team because I'm rooting for the MCU. Yeah. I really want to see some other people fail. God, I want to see it so bad, just so I can be like, oh, it's not so easy, is it? It's not so. Oh, you're just not gonna. So you're telling me it wasn't just Marvel not making billion-dollar movies? No one's making billion-dollar movies. Huh, can we take a moment to breathe that in for a second, everyone, and maybe just stop hating on this one?
That energy is never the same. You notice that energy is never the same.
Never the same when these other movies don't do it, bro.
Never the same.
I gotta watch 7 months of Marvel's press run, like why the Marvels ain't good. And then you got other mad movies not making as much or not being as critically acclaimed, and we still don't get that same energy, man.
Now, I will say, with James Gunn running DC and with what they have with Superman, I think competition will be good. If that is good,
I hope so.
That's what you want. I am rooting for that movie to do well.
I will always call balls and strikes. I think it sucks that DCU was bad. I think It's competition makes things better. And also as a nerd, I'd never root against my own entertainment. What kind of dummy does that? Like, oh man,
Rob, when people would ask me about that, it's like, I'm going to see these movies. I want them to be good because I'm going to have to spend 2 hours with them.
I'm going.
It matters. Yeah.
This is on the calendar, dog. If they put it out, I'm going. My wife stopped going to some of these and I will go by myself. That's how committed I am to being I'm going to see this.
Rod, I go to the movies by myself truly at least once a week. I'll see anything. So it's like, oh, do you want this movie to be good? Yes, I want. Did I think that the Flash was going to be good? No, but I wanted it to be good because I was going to be there.
Listen, I'll lie to myself for 30 minutes. Like for the first 30 minutes, I'm like, nah, it could get good. It could get see, because if you look at it like that, and then like 2 hours in, I'm like, oh god, y'all did it again. But I kind of do want some other people to have like a crack at the summer, and I hope that collectively them taking some time off one. Higher quality stuff because people need time to make this stuff. Yeah. But two, the audience needs to appreciate it. You know, absent makes the heart go fonder, and maybe we'll get back to like, I don't think we're ever getting to Endgame level, but we'll get back to like maybe like Avengers level, like the first Avengers or something.
Yeah, and that's really honestly you want to hit on that level. You want to make sure that you have people excited, like what Florence Pugh did with the Thunderbolts, promoting that. Have your really. Charismatic actors and people promote the stuff. Float Iman Vellani as much as you possibly can and have her promote the stuff because she wants to be here. She wants to do good work with Marvel. Mm-hmm. Like you got to tap into that stuff. Just the simple stuff of seeing the stuff that Bernthal put out last week with the cast of Daredevil and all of that stuff. That's
because some of these people have been doing these characters for 10 years and they've been on top. So I get their like being over it. Like I get it. I'm not saying it's like a good thing that they're over it, but like, yeah, if you don't want to be Drax, that makes sense. Like Iman Vellani, let's look at the new hype, the new people coming in. You think the people from the Marvel Netflix shows aren't extremely excited to be a part of the MCU? Like you see it, you can feel it from their social media being like, okay, now we over here with the big dogs. And the thing I want to say, I forgot before we, whenever you guys are gonna wrap up, I want to make sure I get this point in. Endgame also is a testament to like intentional diversity. It is a testament to bringing people together whose stories don't get to portray the heroes in these stories too often, who get pushed to the back, who don't get front screen billing. And the only awkward moment in the last fight is, of course, when all the women do it. But I love that moment because the only thing they didn't do was play like Destiny's Child or something, during like just change the music real quick. Yeah. But that moment mattered to me so much because I'm like, yo, they did this work on purpose. Cause so they could have a moment where it's like, yeah, the screen is filled with a dozen women superheroes, and we did do that, and we did make it important and intentional that they're here. And I think this phase five is hard. I understand why people are down on it, but it's hard for me not to defend it because so much of it is a testament to like studios putting a lot of money and time behind like other people that aren't white dudes and being like, but what if we make a movie with this? And I'm like, it's hard for me to give it up. I know I'm biased as fuck, but it's hard for me to just be like, it all sucks. I'm like, nah, dog, I like it. Yeah. I like this too.
I also think that, I have complaints with some of the things he's done. I'm not, going to be glazing him 100% of the time. But I think the thing about it, which I think makes it worth defending, is I honestly think that Kevin Feige does care about it. Like, I don't think it's a ploy from him. I think he does sincerely want to do that. And so, like, that's why I'm similar with you, where I was like, if they're trying to tell more diverse stories, I want to back that up because, like, Hollywood is looking for any excuse to say that it didn't work. Like, they'll give a white character 17 chances, but it's like, the Marvels didn't work. We're going to be giving you every new Avenger is going to be played by a guy named Caden. Sorry, couldn't help you.
Yeah, because like Taylor Kitsch has gotten so many chances. You know what I mean?
Too many. I know people love Friday Night. Too many. He had too many chances.
Right. He got so many chances. He got to play Gambit with the wrong type of accent. Like, this man has gotten so many movies. They're hiding him in movies now. The trailer don't even show him. You get 30 minutes of a movie.
What you're saying stopped being true like 5 years ago. Hollywood eventually gave up on him. He's not still doing stuff.
I don't know, dog. I seen a movie the other, like not too long ago, where he was the bad guy in the movie and he wasn't in the trailer. And I said, man, what the fuck, Taylor Kitsch? What the fuck? But my point isn't how recent the chances are, Jake. You're getting lost. Point is he got 50.
Sorry.
Yeah.
You're right. You're right. He definitely did. Yeah. He got too many chances.
Yeah, that Mars movie would have ended everyone but him. And meanwhile, you know, we're like, will Nia DaCosta ever direct again? You know?
It basically ended the director of it had to go back to making cartoons.
Right. Like he's now hurting other people's careers is how many chances he got. But my point being like there's moments in this movie that are so like they're not even doing the like message, but it's intentional because behind the scenes they're like, yeah, we got to make sure these characters are a big part of it. I think that's another reason I defend it is because I don't think we're going to keep seeing that forever. We just had that Disney thing with the shareholders. Yeah. Some of the shareholders are like, you know what the problem is? Not enough white men. Okay, that's what's messing the movies up. Why we start doing movies with other people? And I'm like, bro, that sentiment.
Why do movies have to have all women in them? Right, I don't understand.
That sentiment.
When did this become DEI's name?
Right?
Sorry, I shouldn't have said that.
Well, Disney, but what's crazy is, because you see that on Twitter, you see that in YouTube comment, and you go, that guy's a loser. Yeah. He lives in a basement. Yeah. This was like shareholders. This is a guy trying to like take over the creative direction of Disney. Now, he got his ass whooped. He lost. But it made me appreciate Kevin Feige more, because it's like, you've been fighting against that the whole time? God damn. Yeah. Like,
he was fighting against Perlmutter for a lot of this time.
Right.
There's a reason we ain't get Black Panther till 2018.
Mm-hmm. Because
that dude didn't want. He said that wouldn't sell toys. Captain Marvel wouldn't sell
their biggest grossing movie at the time, I believe, was Black Panther for a while. Yeah. And then, but y'all was going to leave a $1 billion idea on the cutting room floor because you just couldn't imagine people wanting to see black people. That's crazy to me. Yeah.
It's really something to notice how, like, I think a lot of people who think they're very smart are like, well, you know, people care about money, so they'll greenlight whatever would make money. It's like, no. I forget. I think it might have been Howard Bryant, actually, who said it first, of like, Jackie Robinson did not get signed until he got signed because they thought he was bad. It's like, they were willing to lose games because they didn't want to sign him. It's like, Perlmutter would rather make less money than put a movie out with a fully black cast. He would. And I think that's the thing we take for granted. And it's like, that's why, like, I don't think that representation solves problems, but I think it is an incredibly good barometer of where we are. And it is, I think, very scary if we backslide in representation. I think that says a lot about our society. That's not nothing. That says a lot.
Right.
Yeah. 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 Couldn't agree more. Listen, guys, I mean, Avengers Endgame, obviously so special. It was great. If you're a new fan of the show, go back to the original Endgame pod. I think Robin Lundberg and Michael Smith dropped by for that one.
Yeah.
All the way back in 2019. So like, yeah, go back there. We did a lot of Endgame content back then. So check that out. And obviously check this out. This was a lot of fun to relive 5 years later. I want to thank our guest and friend Rod for joining us.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate you, brother.
Thank you for having me. Where can we follow you
and find your work? Of course, as always.
Yeah,
yes.
Always.
Yeah. And you can find my work, The Black Guy Who Tests, is my podcast I do with my wife. We do it like 4 or 5 times a week. And we also, if you're interested in our nerdy takes, You go to the blackouttips.com/premium. We have a show behind a paywall called The Nerd Off. I got to get y'all on The Nerd Off so we can nerd off together. And
we'll be happy to be here.
Yeah, I got y'all. And
the place is my room. I don't know why I said that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Tom and the internet as a place. But I definitely got to get y'all on just because it's, you know, I love talking nerd stuff with y'all, man. I do not do this often. And I mean that sincerely as a compliment. Like, there's so many people that I would not want to talk to about stuff like this because it's just, yeah.
Means a lot.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, y'all know, y'all been on the internet where you just like, oh, what did I get myself into, guys? You guys are fun and I always have a great time. And I do one of our spinoff shows on Thursday, which is why lately I haven't been able to be here on Thursday because my co-host can't do any other day. But at some point, I got to chop it up with y'all about X-Men, too, because that joint go hard, dog. We got to have a discussion. Thank y'all for having me. And you can follow me on social media. Best place for me is still Twitter, because we never given Elon Musk the satisfaction of calling anything else. And it's Rodimus Prime.
That's right.
So just follow me there.
Salute to you, brother. Jake Christie, where can we follow you, sir?
Well, first of all, I got to say that Endgame, the Cuba Gooding Jr. movie, is on both Freevee and Peacock, if anyone wants to watch it.
Oh, my God.
You can follow me at the Jake Christie and listen to my other podcast, Love It for a Psych, Psych Rewatch Podcast.
Awesome stuff. You can follow me on Twitter at AnthonyCanton_3. Follow the show at MC University Pod. We've been continuing the X-Men 97 coverage, so look out for that. And of course, patreon.com/MCUniversityPod, where you can get our bonus content. We're still doing the Mission Impossible series. This month will be Ghost Protocol. And of course, we got the subscriber mailbag that's coming up soon. $3 to get in to the Discord, $8 Avengers level. And keep supporting, of course, subscribe to the YouTube channel and keep them numbers going up. And of course, five star, both Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Appreciate everybody for supporting and listening. For Rod and Jake, I'm Anthony Canton III. This has been Marvel Cinematic University. We will talk to you next time. We love you 3,000.